if they matter to you, if you think they might matter to you. Give us a call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Welcome to Houston Indie Media Collective. We are so excited to be with you today on this wonderful Friday evening. We have a great show lined up, but we're going to kick it off today with some announcements. Johnny?
Yeah, tomorrow, the Houston Peace and Justice Center is planning their first time in Houston, the Peace Conference. It's going to be at Texas Southern University at the Barbara Jordan Mickey Leland School of Public Affairs around the issue of U.S. foreign policy. And the purpose of the conference, or one of the goals of the conference, is to have a discussion exploring options for U.S. foreign policy to see if there are any out there. The conference will be bringing together people from the left and right who all agree on reducing U.S. military spending and use of our military. So I think that given everything that's been going on for the last many years, and folks want to explore what some viable options are, this might be something that folks are interested in. We can't talk about money, but there is a registration fee, but I don't think they plan on turning anyone away. Students are free with an ID, and lunch is included in the event, and that's tomorrow. So that is between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. And want to also remind folks that anyone that pledges during this current fund drive will be eligible for a mini iPad drawing giveaway. Now, the only requirement or the only restriction on this is that you can only win one. So there are a total of three, I believe. So my understanding is that anyone that pledges will be eligible for this drawing. So, you know, hopefully that'll encourage folks that may need a little bit of encouraging, pushing to have an extra incentive besides the premiums that we already offer during Pledge Drive.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm really excited about today's show. Those of you that have school-age kids know that it has been testing time, and we are about to delve into that topic. Lots of people are starting to sort of wake up and question, why are we testing children, kindergartners, and do I have to do it? So our very own Rachel Clark is going to give us some more great information. Rachel?
Thank you, Courtney. And of course, there is growing momentum, as Courtney mentioned, building around the fight back against large corporations, the largest and most egregious being Pearson, although they are not the only show in town, and the way they are trying to profit off of high stakes testing, as well as test prep materials and textbooks. We have two members of that movement joining us today. First, we have Bob Schaefer. He's with the group Fair Test. And we also have Dan Koch, who's on the ground in the state of New York, where a record 200,000 students opted out of recent high-stakes testing. And with the numbers being so high, in fact, it appears that in some school districts in New York, they will not be able to meet the participation requirements of 95% as stipulated by No Child Left Behind. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Good evening.
Okay, thank you, Bob. This first question's for you. A lot of our listeners might not be aware of how the bipartisan legislation of No Child Left Behind morphed into No Child Left Untested, and how did we get here, and why is it currently being reexamined? Also, on the heels of that question, why are we reauthorizing and reexamining this piece of law 2 years after when our elected officials were mandated to do so?
Well, that's a very complicated question. I think the simple answer is that when the No Child Left Behind law was signed by Governor Bush, President Bush, in 2002, it put the federal lead foot on the testing accelerator. Just by itself, No Child Left Behind virtually tripled the volume of standardized tests required in the nation's public schools. And to get kids ready for those big tests that were used to evaluate schools and ultimately teachers, many states and districts added their own tests on top of that, to the extent that a recent survey done by the Council of Chief State School Officers found that the average American public school student in her public school career takes 113 standardized tests, about an average of about 10 a year. And that's clearly over the top. It's insane. So finally this year, not just 2 years after they were supposed to do it, but 7 years after they were supposed to do it, Congress has started moving to try and overhaul the terribly flawed No Child Left Behind law. And in the Senate, a bipartisan bill is moving forward, which doesn't reduce the amount of federally required testing, but significantly reduces the stakes and punitive sanctions attached to it. And we think that that's a partial first step. But the feds also have to reduce the number of tests they require as well, to send a clear message to state and local policymakers that enough is enough. We need to start ending testing overkill, misuse, and overuse.
Okay, thank you. And Dan, as I mentioned, you're coming to us from New York, a state where we are seeing several parents, most of them being in some of the suburban, more affluent communities, but nonetheless, record numbers all over that particular state. In your recent article in Socialist Worker, you included a minimization of this movement by our education secretary, Arne Duncan, quoting, white suburban mom, the movement was comprised of white suburban moms who all of a sudden their child isn't as brilliant and they as they thought they were, and their school isn't as quite as good as they thought they were. What do you want to make sure that listeners know about what's going on in your home state of New York?
Sure. Well, first of all, just to understand what it means for looking like over 200,000 parents and students decided to opt out of these tests, that's out of a total of 1.2 million people taking these tests in grades 3 through 8. So that's one out of every six people taking the, not just a passive stance, but actively writing a letter to their school, opting out, sometimes in the face of a lot of pressure. Just to give a sense of what that proportion means, we have, like many states, really low voter turnout. One out of six people is more than the number of eligible voters that voted to reelect Andrew Cuomo for governor last year. So, and in terms of the, you know, you mentioned in the introduction that some districts in New York are going to fall short of the 95% cutoff. It's actually the vast, vast majority of districts in New York are going to, from New York City to, or from many cities to some of the farming counties upstate, are all looking like, or most of them are looking like they're going to fall below the 95%. I think the comment that Arne Duncan made, which was, you know, in the fall of 2013, but it's been repeated, it just shows that originally, when I think there was this drive for testing, a lot of it was driven by sort of bashing teachers, and it was all supposed to be in the name of students and parents who were supposed to be clamoring for all these testing. And now that we're seeing, now that, like, in New York, this is our third year of these Common Core tests, and every year the resistance has multiplied exponentially. Now that you're seeing resistance among parents, suddenly it's time for parent bashing. And this idea that we're just, you know, a bunch of overprotective coddlers who are, you know, so scared of finding out how our precious children are doing on the test. The fact is, you know, we're all public school parents. Of course, we recognize that tests that matter. Generally, the tests that matter are the ones that are created by our kids' teachers to measure how they're doing. That's what tests should be. These tests are being created by the Pearson Corporation. They have set up for kids and teachers to be labeled failures and for schools to end up getting to get closed down. And the last point I just want to make about the higher rates in the suburbs is that, first of all, people should know that in the United States in the 21st century, suburbs are not all white. There's a town in Long Island called Brentwood, which has a very high opt-out rate. I think 70% of their student body is Latino. So just that's one thing. And I know in New York City, where I am, one of the reasons why our opt-out numbers are lower, although I should admit, you know, they are growing incredibly from what they were last year, is that we already have in New York City sort of a market-based public school system where you have to compete. You have to compete to get into the better middle schools, the better high schools, and then these tests are one of the things that most schools use. So in a lot of suburban districts where people are going to go from, you know, everyone knows what middle school they're going to go to and what high school they're going to go to, people actually have the freedom to make the choice. There's many parents in New York City who are outraged about these tests but feel like they have no choice but to take them, in order to, you know, especially people who are in school districts, you know, particular districts in New York City that aren't happy with their middle school or their high school, they feel like they have no choice but to take these tests.
Okay, thank you very much. And also in terms of that market-based system, we have a very similar program here in Houston ISD, which is the magnet program. So we did see record numbers of parents within the Houston ISD. There were from 1 to 50 who openly opted out. Of course, that's shy in comparison to New York. That being said, Mr. Gould, one of the chief academic officers, sent a letter out essentially threatening those parents with forced summer school. And I just encourage everyone out there, all the listeners, please go to the Community Voices for Public Education website, because there is responses to that letter that is not accurate and that is not right. Although I do understand here in Houston also we have several parents that are confronted with this same situation. Gentlemen, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we are in pledge drive. So if you can hold back right now, we have to do something that none of us really love to do, but it is necessary because we are a 100% listener-supported community radio station. We are part of the Pacifica Network. We are the only radio station located in the southern United States that's part of the Pacifica Network. We are very proud of that. We'd like to continue to do what we do. So we need people to please pick up the phones, 713-526-5738. We've dedicated a lot of time to this issue of the corporatization of public education, as well as the pushback. We covered the Houston Federation of Teachers essentially filing a lawsuit against Houston ISD, which is the most aggressive as far as these corporate reform efforts that's led by the current superintendent, Dr. Terry Greer. We have also shed light and provided a lot of information for parents if they want to choose to opt their children out, and also spoken a lot about the vast majority of research that goes beyond just are we going to test or are we not going to test, but really talking about what research says sets up schools and communities for success, which are smaller community-based schools and programs. John, what would you like to add as far as people listening out there, whether they're first-time or long-time listener, why they should choose to support us this evening?
Well, I think we're one of the few outlets in the city that has covered this whole question of testing from the perspective that we have. I don't think that any other outlet, any other show has had the guests on that we have that have dealt with various aspects of this whole question of testing. And as a result, we have been able to put out a lot of information that I know a lot of parents have gotten, and has made it possible for them to make sound decisions based on what they feel they need for their child, and have opened up a lot of discussions. All that being said, if we did not have this show, if the station wasn't here, we would not have been able to do that. Without us bringing guests onto the show like we have this evening, there's a vacuum. There's a void there of a perspective that calls into question what's going on. We all know. I'm a parent. My kids are grown now, but you know, it's very hard sometimes for a parent to question what the school says. I mean, my God, this is an institution that we're taught that from the day one that, you know, we entrust them with our children. We say, okay, you know, do what you have to do. And we've always thought that, you know, the schools are doing things right. Oh, there are minor problems. But we're not always equipped to ask the hard questions. We're not trained to take control of our education, of our kids' education, and ask questions that need to be asked. So on this issue, I hope and I know that we've been able to move that along a little bit. And so to me, it's been very important to be able to give this information to kids. And this is only one subject that we've dealt with over the last year. You know, we've dealt with a lot of, capital punishment issues. We've dealt with a lot of police brutality issues. And we're going to continue to talk about these issues that affect all of us, that affect the society on a day-to-day basis.
And if I can just add really quickly, you know, I am a person that does not yet have children. And, you know, even like from an outsider's perspective, it just seems like there's an awful lot of emphasis placed on testing to the point where children are just learning the test. And, you know, that takes away from the fun and joy of education. I'm really grateful for this show myself, because where else are you going to hear the timeline in the history like they laid
You're
out
not.
Today about how we got to this point? And I don't know if we have time to play it, but I just want to let you know, there's a little girl, a 9-year-old girl in Florida, who did an impassioned speech at her school board, Sydney Smoot. So if you haven't heard it, we might at the end have a little chance to play it, some of what she's seeing at the, you know, very, very end on the way out. But, you know, that's also a kid's perspective. And where else do you hear, like, kids' perspectives on what it's like to give to do the testing? And so I'm going to give this number, 713-526-5738. If you like what you're hearing, if you want more information, just in general, there are so many topics that are not covered in mainstream media. This is an avenue to do so.
Okay, excellent. And going back to our interview, because we do want to be able to hopefully delve a little deeper. Bob, this one's back to you. What a lot of people don't realize about Common Core standards in 44 of the states, but also we have our own Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, or TEKS, is that there is one corporation that is owning over 50% of the market. They're the largest, they're the most egregious, but they are not the only ones. But most of these testing companies and these test prep materials are being forced onto schools with very little accountability or oversight. Also, the exams fail to take into consideration the accommodation and needs of special learning populations, such as English language learners and other abled children, such as those with dyslexia or other learning disabilities. What is your response to these lack of accommodations and the fact that, for example, even in the Washington Post, you saw severely and profound other abled children being expected to take a standardized test in Florida?
Well, before I answer that good question, I just checked online, and the Houston Independent School District retracted its threat from the
That's
the
wonderful. That's from book. Before
and that is because,
30 minutes ago.
That's because parents push back. All of this testing stuff is a political issue, not an educational one. And the more parents and teachers and community allies push, the more the politicians backtrack because they know they're wrong. But in terms of the testing industry, everything you said is right. It's based on political and ideological formulas that there is a one-size-fits-all, we call it one-size-fits-none, way to test every student in the United States and get accurate, meaningful analysis. You're testing second language kids, recent immigrant kids, disabled kids, and others in the same way that we're testing rich majority kids. And the notion that the results from those tests have any real educational meaning boggles the mind. Yet companies like Pearson and others are out there selling a bit of bill of goods to policymakers that these tests are somehow going to help improve our schools. They don't. They're used as a political club to punish teachers and students in low-income communities for their own poverty, not because the schools are failing to do a decent job.
Thank you, Bob. That's very exciting. Yes, I was following the feed. That is hot off the press news that Houston ISD has been forced to retract. There were a number of organizations that blew up social media, such as the Texas Parents Educational Rights Network, also here in Houston, the Community Voices for Public Education. So great job to them. Also, in terms of English language learners, research says that they take between 7 to 10 years before they master a second language. Right here in Texas, they currently have a one-year exemption from state assessments. We do not have much time, but Dan, I did mention Pearson as being the largest and most egregious of the test prep monsters out there. They are running the show there in many states, including New York, where you're calling from, and they have expanded in your particular state to the teacher accreditation business. That just kind of makes me cringe to say. And even Governor Andrew Cuomo is pushing to have high-stakes exams tied to teacher evaluations like they currently are here in Houston ISD. Do you think Cuomo's in Pearson's pocket, and can you speculate perhaps on some of the scope and influence of Pearson on elected officials like Governor Cuomo?
Well, you know, I think that that may be a little bit unfair to Andrew Cuomo, because he's actually in the pockets of so many industries. Pearson is one of them, but I want to mention a few others, just because I sound like you've done a very good job. You know, you really laid out the case about Pearson and how it is moving to control almost every phase of the testing and then accrediting the teachers based on how they do on the testing system. But, you know, Andrew Cuomo has also taken $5 million in donations in recent years from the hedge fund industry, which is, you know, increasingly becoming the dominant player in New York. And the hedge fund industry, at least in New York City, is very big into opening up charter schools and pushing for charter schools. They actually had a conference recently at the Harvard Club in Midtown Manhattan that was called Blackboards and Bonds, Investing in Charter Schools. And so I think that, and I bring that up because I think when you talk about the prospect of our public education system being turned into a private business, there's so many sources of profit to be made. There's the test prep and there's the test curriculum and everything Pearson's involved in, but there's also the charter schools. There's also the online courses. There's opening up, for-profit schools. And this is something, the education writer Jonathan Kozol, he wrote a while ago in a Harper's Magazine article about how the education industry in a lot of ways represents the final frontier of, you know, sectors that were once under public control, sort of the way that healthcare has become such a booming for-profit part of the economy. And that's definitely what's going on with the teacher evaluation system. Last year, because the opt-out movement was so strong, it forced Governor Cuomo to back down and say that these new state tests would not be used to determine student promotion in the next grade. But then he turned around and doubled how important they would be for teacher evaluation, up to 50%, which actually, so the tests that he's saying aren't a useful measure for students somehow are a useful measure for how teachers are teaching students. It makes no sense unless you see the goal as being to weaken the teachers' unions, to weaken things like tenure rights, and things like that. And I think that's, you know, if I have time to make one more point, the one thing that I find ironic that, you know, are this movement, we've taken on the name of, you know, the opt-out movement, is that if anything, we're the people who are saying that we want to opt in for public education. You know, if you saw these kind of numbers in New York and around the country of people saying that we wanted to opt out of the public education system and go to charter schools, all these politicians would be celebrating us for our choice. But when we're actually trying to fight within the public education system for the democratic rights that we all have to help to be part of determining what we think is the best education for our students, and teachers are, you know, many parents are also teachers. They're a big part of this movement, the people who actually know best. That's when we get demonized. That's when we get the name-calling and that we're just pampered parents and all that stuff. And, you know, I do want to say that my daughter, this is her second year opting out. And for her, this gets back to some of what you guys were talking about before. The experience of us deciding to do this together, discussing what education could be, has been as valuable an experience for her as everything that she's learned in class. And it's way more valuable than all the testing that she's gone through. So I think being part of this kind of a social movement is and learning what it means to be a citizen, and I mean that broadly, whether you're actually a citizen of this country or not, but actually being part of that, part of determining what our schools and our society should look like, that's actually what a huge part of what the role of public education should be. And, of course, that never appears on any of Pearson's materials.
Thank you so much. And we just got a report that we have raised $70. We would love to double that in the last 5 minutes that we have on the show. 713-526-5738. That's 713-JAM-KPFT. Also, regarding more research and more interesting facts, the single biggest determining factor of a child's success on these high-stakes tests is their socioeconomic situation. It is not the teacher. It's not the school. It is literally the circumstances that they are in that are beyond the school day. And so these tests do not measure academic readiness or teacher effectiveness. They measure what we already know, which is that those who live and are raised in socioeconomically challenged standards, we live in a society where they are already at a disadvantage.
But I'd like to just add one point. From my psychological background, it's also the reference in which the tests are created. So if you're referencing tests based in one factor and version of society, then of course children outside of that are not going to be able to test, they're not going to score well. Based on that.
Exactly. So we do need people to please, we would love to get a few more pledges in, 713-526-5738. And real quickly, we have someone out in Pledge Central, so we can go ahead and thank.
Hank, are you out there?
Yeah, you've got a $25 pledge from an opt-out parent who wishes to.
Woo! Yeah!
Thank
you. Come on, opt-out people.
Come on, we know you're out there.
Opt out of testing, opt in to KPFT.
Nice.
Well said, Hank.
Done it better, Hank.
Okay, and hoping that we get those phone lines going. Bob, right now you are actually in Chicago this weekend at a different type of school reform conference that's going on. You only have about a minute, but can you maybe talk a little bit about what's going on in Chicago this weekend and where people can learn more about all of these issues?
I'm at the Network for Public Education Conference in Chicago, where activists from all around the country, as many as 500, will be talking about how to take back control of our public school from those who are trying to dominate it with standardized tests and profit-making initiatives. You can find out more about what's going on at fairtest.org, our website, www.fairtest.org.
Thank you. And also, Dan Koch, our other guest, he writes with the Socialist Worker. I encourage everyone, if you also want to read just a great article that we did not have time to delve into, you can Google Who Will Test the Testers. It really is a great read. We have only two more minutes to bug you, beg, plead, pick up the phone, call 713-526-5738. Do we have any parting words, John or Courtney?
Well, this has been an excellent show. For if you didn't have a lot of information, you have more now. So I implore you to continue listening. This is one of the few places, KPFT here on the Houston Indie Media Show. This is one of the few places where you can get this information. So let us know. Call us with a pledge of support, 713-526-5738.
Yeah, and if you don't get a chance to call in this evening, go to kpft.org and you can pledge online, designated HIMC, Houston Indie Media. We'd appreciate that. And there are a lot of different ways to make the payment. So it's not anything you have to do all at once up front. We take it in just about any way over any period of time, trying to make it as easy as possible.
Okay, and a special shout out to Jacob, our board op for the revolution, also to the Community Voices for Public Education and opt-out parents that were listening this evening and who pledged their support so we can keep doing what we do. I'm Rachel signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.
Winter in America. winter in America. The Constitution, a noble piece of paper, with free society, the struggle, but they died in vain. And now democracy.